just say, you know what, before like the load happened, we were a people, and why don't we go back to taking one tradition since we are here?
So the answer to that is a long answer. Rav Sperling has a whole class on the involvement of Sephardi and Ashkenazi Minagim. I recommend you get the recording of that. It's worth listening to. We're just going to address a few aspects of what you're asking about the different Minagim, and the rest we'll leave open, but I think it'll give us an opening to an understanding. Firstly, who said that when all the Jewish people were in Israel, everyone had the same Minag? Now, Rizal writes that there were 12 different nusachot of how to pray. Each tribe had their own nusach, how to pray. Because in heaven, there are 12 gates, so to speak, through which our prayer enters. And each tribe, because of their specific traits, have a different gate that their prayer enters. And therefore, each tribe, what's fitting for them, is a different nusach in the prayer. So the Arizal says there were 12 nusachot, and then there's a 13, which is like an all-encompassing one. That's what the Arizal writes. So first of all, even in prayer, you see that they might not have had the same minhag. It's brought that different tribes had a different type of talis, because one of the signs they had was their talis. It showed which tribe you were from. You could look at someone, see the design on his talis, and say, oh, he's from this tribe, he's from that tribe. So not everything was uniform just because we were all here together. Each tribe had their own central authority, central halachic authority. Each tribe had their Sanhedrin, their big bezdin, and it didn't have to be uniform. Different tribes could have different rulings in halacha. Even at the time of the Second Temple, we had a machlokas whether you're supposed to desecrate the Shabbos for preparing for the milah. Rav Lezer says that you not only can do bris milah when a baby is 8 days old, only when it's a milah on time, at eight days, can you perform bris milah on Shabbos. So that everyone agrees to. Rav Lezer says, not only can you perform the bris milah on Shabbos, but you could prepare everything you need for the bris milah. So in Rav Lezer's town, they would chop down trees on Shabbos, make a fire, burn the metal, melt the metal into a knife, and do all the preparations from scratch for bris milah to show how precious the mitzvah of bris milah is, and do that on Shabbos. Now, if they do that out of Rav Lezer's town, they'd get killed for that. The rabbis disagreed with Rav Lezer. They held that you're not allowed to do that. But they, in Rav Lezer's town, so that's how he ruled, and that was the halacha there. The Gemara records that there was a time when there was a decrees against the Jewish people that no one should perform a bris milah. And the Roman Empire decreed upon every Jewish city, aside from Rav Lezer's city. Rav Lezer's city was given a allowance from the government. They're allowed to perform a bris milah. And our sages saw this as a sign that in heavens, they approved of the way they were doing things. We still don't rule halachically like Rav Lezer. We still say that you're not allowed to do anything other than the bris milah on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do all the preparations that precede the bris milah on Shabbos. You should have them prepared from before Shabbos. But at the end of the day, that assumption that before we all went into exile, the halacha was uniform, I don't think is true. There were differences. Rabbi Yossi held that you could eat chicken with milk. So we say that that's forbidden. You're not allowed to eat any type of meat with milk. But Rabbi Yossi held you're allowed to eat chicken meat with milk. So he says that the Torah's commandment only encompasses eating animal meat with milk. In his town...
That's just the Gezerah anyways, right?
Yeah. So in his town, they ate chicken meat with milk. So to say that halacha was always uniform, I don't think is true. It's true that there was a central figure which ruled in halacha. Now, not all of minhagim stem from the fact that we're in exile. Some minhagim do, like the way we pronounce things, but not all minhagim do. Some stem from different traditions in how to rule halachically, and different opinions in how to rule halachically. And that you could have had also in time in the temple. And that, the fact that we came back to Israel, so why should that change? There are those who claim we came back to Israel, and in the land of Israel there is one posek, and there was one custom, and everyone should adopt that halacha. But many, I think even most poskim, say that each Each community that came to Israel maintains its customs. When an individual switches communities, then he adopts the communities of the monogamy of the community he moved into. But when whole communities enter the land of Israel, so each community maintains its minhag. There was a thought process in the direction you're saying. In the army, they wanted to have everyone saying the same prayer, so they compiled a nusach which is supposed to encompass the other nusachim, so that everyone can daven a uniform prayer in the army. And there are different opinions about whether that was a good idea or a bad idea halachically. But there was a direction that way, and Rav Avad Yosef also goes the direction that you're saying when he claims that he rules halachically, that in the land of Israel, the halacha has always been to go with the Shulchan Aruch, and even Ashkenazim, he says, should adopt the rulings of the Shulchan Aruch as opposed to the Rama. And quite obviously, his psak hasn't become accepted. You see that no one does this. But that's what he rules.
Who said this?
Rav Avad Yosef.
Nobody accepted it?
The Sfardim, his Talmidim, they go with him. But I don't see any Ashkenazim stopping to perform their customs. I haven't seen anyone go that way.
What about Baal Tshuva that moved to Israel?
Well, Baal Tshuva is a separate question. Does Baal Tshuva have any customs? Does he know that any customs from his parents? If a person grew up with no customs, so then a person can adopt whichever type of custom he wants. Person should do it at the same time that he's consulting with a rabbi, because otherwise a person could end up all confused, and the person has to have stability in his home. His children have to know, we have the custom of this and this, where we do like Ashkenazim, we do like Sfardim, we do like Taimonim.
Well, when does it really become a problem other than Kidniot?
Once you're with what?
Other than like Kidniot, when does it really become a problem?
Comes a problem with what shul you go to, whether you wear a talis, you don't wear a talis, how long you wait between meat and milk. Do you put on food on a platan Shabbos or do you not? Do you bless your kids every Friday night or not? How does your wife dress? The Sfardim, Rav Avadia says a woman is not allowed to wear a wig. The Chabad hold that a woman must wear a wig. So these are big differences. You'd say it's weird, but if you're going to adopt the Chabad customs, then it makes sense for your wife to wear a wig. And if you're going to adopt the customs of Rav Avadia Yosef, then your wife may not wear a wig. When you buy a new vessel, so Rav Avadia says that you do not have to be to kasher it. All the Ashkenazi poskim, as far as I know, hold that because today they line the metal pots with pig's fat or some kind of non-kosher fat, the first time you buy a pot, you have to boil water in it to take out that lining which they put on pots. Rav Avadia Yosef holds you don't have to do that. How are you going to run your home? When you buy a regular earthenware cup like those, so most poskim in Israel hold you have to tovel them. Feinstein holds you do not have to tovel them because they are glazed with glass. How do we consider that glass? Do we consider it a glass vessel or not? Now, are you going to go with the custom of Rabbi Feinstein? So then there are 100 other stringencies you should take upon yourself, and 100 leniencies you could also take upon yourself. If you go to Rav Avadia, same thing. If you go to Chabad, same thing. It's not limited just to Kitniot. It's limited. It expands to many things. Rav Avadia Yosef says women have to cover their hair when they make a blessing. If you're going to go through Rav Avadia Yosef, your daughters have to have some kind of head covering when they make a blessing on food. So you have to decide, and preferably do it with someone who could help you do it the right way. People say they go with Rav Kook. Why? Because they don't shave. So they don't know that Rav Kook has a special nusach on how you make the blessing of Borei Nefashos. Rav Kook is of the opinion that on certain foods, when you make the blessing Borei Nefashos, you're supposed to end the blessing Baruch Ata Hashem Chei Olamim. No one says that, right? They don't know that Rav Kook says that. So people can't just say, I go with this person. Well, you have to have someone who could help you go with that person if that's going to be your posik in halacha. You can't just say, I go with that person. Rav Kook has many halachic rulings. The first time you take off Truma and Meiser, do you say Shechionu or not? So Rav Kook has a long response of pertaining to that.
Like Tamid customs, isn't one meant to follow one's father's customs?
The ideal is to follow one's father's customs.
Ideally, you can't switch here, switch.
You can't switch. He's discussing a situation where a person doesn't have customs from the home.
Yeah, but if their father, their customs previously that their fathers followed, they should.
Their forefathers. That a person should discuss with his own rabbi, whether he's obligated to customs that were not kept in his own home. Meaning, if a person came from England and he knows the customs in England, does he have to maintain those customs? If a person comes from Germany, does he have to maintain the Germanic customs? Or do we say because there's been a break and the customs have not been kept, now he's entitled to choose his own customs? that a person should discuss with his own rebbe. Yeah?
But then, when we have the Sanhedrin, right? Then there is just one way, right?
Not necessarily, because there were private courts. Meaning, whatever the Sanhedrin rules, that we have to go with that ruling. But there are questions that won't come to the Sanhedrin that will come to a lower court. And this lower court could rule this way in this town. And in a different town, a court could rule differently.
Right.
In one town, generally, you had one way. You can't rule half the town this way and half the town that way. But two towns could have different rulings. Their rabbis or their courts could rule differently.
They can go against what the Sanhedrin?
Not against what the Sanhedrin, but not every question was posed to the Sanhedrin.
Right.
Okay?